Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company for another edition of Live on Aero, the Irish programme. And it's even nicer because I'm back in the TRE studios. Nice to be back. It's only a very short visit, but I'm coming back at the end of the month for a longer stay. More details on that in the next couple of weeks. Anyway, nice to be back in the sunshine, although it is quite warm, isn't it? I hope you had a good week. I certainly did. Got a bit of golf in. I had to do a bit of gardening too and a few bits and pieces. But look, we made it through and I have a nice programme, I think, lined up for you this evening. I am going to be paying tribute to a man, I suppose, that I was fortunate enough to be able to introduce on stage a number of times, interview on radio, and call a friend. Jerry Lynch passed away yesterday week. I got a phone call. As I was actually working on last week's programme, I got a telephone call on the Sunday just to say that Jerry had passed away unexpectedly. And it was a huge shock. And I decided that the shock was so great and I wanted to do something nice, I wouldn't make reference to it last week on the programme. And I got together with, well, I didn't get together, but on the phone, I managed to get PJ Curtis and Cormac McConnell to pay tribute to Jerry. And that will be on the programme today. George Lee will join me as well. And we'll take a look at the new government, the formation of it, and what people have been thinking and saying about it since it was formed last Saturday week. Oh, 5 months after we went to the polls. But we'll talk about that later. I've got some famous Irish birthdays for you as well, which we'll be coming to very shortly. There'll be some music from that, and also I'll be playing the number one song in Ireland on this very day back in 1979. I remember it well. So we'll be get stuck in. Oh, but just to let you know that if you would like to get involved in the programme in any shape or form, if you'd like to make a comment, ask for maybe a piece of music, ask for a request or something, let me know something is happening. I would obviously like to hear from you. Email is the best way to do it, and you can email me at ger@tre.radio. Simple as that. Let's have a look at the birthdays then. Today, Monday, the 6th of July, halfway through the year, Dave Allam, comedian and satirist, was born in Dublin in 1936. Killian Scott, the actor, if you're a fan of the Irish production Love Hate from a number of years ago, and he played Tommy in that. He was born in Kilmallock in County Limerick. I didn't know that, in 1985. Gavin James, the singer, born in Dublin in 1991. Piers Doherty, high-profile Sinn Féin politician, was born in 1977. And Paddy Cronin, fiddle player, born in Kerry in 1925. Very influential fiddle player was Paddy Cronin. Tuesday, tomorrow, the 7th of July, Sean Gallagher, businessman, presidential candidate, and I think broadcaster as well, born in Monaghan in 1962. Fellow by the name of Francis Fowke, F-O-W-K-E. He was an engineer and an architect. He designed the Royal Albert Hall in London and the National Gallery in Dublin. Well, he was born on the 7th of July back in 1823. Wayne McCullough, the boxer, the Olympic silver medalist from Barcelona in 1992 and the world bantamweight champion 1995, was born in Belfast on that day in 1970. Wednesday, the 8th of July, Robbie Keane, the footballer, born in Dublin in 1980. David Wallace, the Munster and Irish rugby player, born in Limerick in 1976. Maura Duran, TV presenter, born in Inishmore in 1970. And Francis McClintock, polar explorer, born in Dundalk in 1819. Thursday is the 9th of July. Michael Carruth, the boxer, a welterweight gold in the Barcelona Olympics in 1992. Caroline Morahan, the actor and TV host, born in Drogheda in 1977. Angus McGrigana, the newscaster, born in Dublin in 1964. And Ollie Canning, wonderful Galway hurler, born in Ballinasloe in 1976. Friday is the 10th, and Fiona Shaw, the actor, she played Petunia Dursley in Harry Potter films, if you remember that. She was born in Cork in 1958. Imelda May, the singer, was born in Dublin in 1974. Frank Stapleton, footballer and manager, born in Dublin, 1956. And Maria McCambridge, long-distance runner, born in Dublin in 1975. On to the weekend we go, and next Saturday, the 11th of July, David Kelly, the actor. You remember him? He was the builder in Fawlty Towers. O'Byrne, I think he used to call himself. Anyway, born in Dublin in 1929, he was so much more than just that particular thing, but I think that's where a lot of people will remember him from. Johnny Sexton, Leinster and Irish rugby player, born in Dublin in 1985. Pauline McGlynn, the actor, she was Mrs. Doyle in Father Ted. Go on, go on, go on. That's her. She was born in Sligo on that day in 1962. And Eddie Roach, the campaigner, was born in Cork in 1955. And finally, next Sunday is the 12th of July. Cathal O'Shea, the poet, was born in Cork on that day in 1956. Brian Cody, the long-standing Kilkenny hurling manager, born in 1954. I would have thought he would have been a little bit older than that, but there you go. Sean Kane, the singer, born in Connemara in 1961. Mick Mackey, a wonderful hurler from Castleconnell in County Limerick, born on that day in 1912. And if you're familiar with Limerick City, you will know that the Gaelic Grounds hurling pitch, the GAA pitch there on the Ennis Road, the stand there is called the Mackey Stand, after Mick Mackey. And finally, Jimmy Greeley, radio presenter, born in Dublin in 1945. So there we go, the famous birthdays for you coming up this week. And we say happy birthday to those that are still with us, and for those that are not, we shall remember them. One of those is a man who has got a gorgeous voice. His name is Sean Kane. He celebrates his birthday next Sunday, and we wish him a happy birthday in advance. And here he is right now with a beautiful song. It's called On the Shores of Newfoundland.
We are the Irish fishermen who work along on the deep, through the storms of winter gales, trying to make a living pulling codfish from the seas and hunting for the big black whale. We work out on the Grand Banks in the sun and wind and rain, 2,000 miles from our own land, fill the holes with saltfish before heading back again from the shores of Newfoundland. The 9 long months away from home, no man on board to bear. It's a loneliness too hard to stand. So we gathered up our families and we're going to settle here on the shores of Newfoundland. We brought along our stories, and we brought along our songs, warm us in the winter's cold. But we won't forget our history, boys, not forget where we came from. To all the trials the time will bring through all the years that we go on. The foreign guns have brought this troubled country to despair, and rule it with an iron hand. We seek out some safe harbour and forget about our fears on the shores of Newfoundland. Codfish and the woods are full of deer. There's a peace that's hard to understand. We take our chance on not being caught to make a home right here on the shore of Newfoundland. And we brought along our stories, and we brought along our songs, to warm us in the winter cold. Won't forget our history, boys, not forget where we came from, to all the trials that time will bring through all the years that we've owned. For we are the Irish fishermen who work on company, and it's here we will make our stand. We're going to make a living pulling codfish from the sea, on the shore of Newfoundland, on the shore of Newfoundland.
The amazing amazing voice of Sean Kane. I introduced Sean on the stage a number of times as well and chatted with him in studios. And he is just one of life's really nice people. Aye, lovely. That song was called On the Shores of Newfoundland. We played it because Sean celebrates his birthday next Sunday, the 12th of July. So happy birthday in advance. Right, I'm going to do a quick break. Come back to me just after that. I will be talking to PJ Curtis and to Cormac McConnell about our good old pal, Jerry Lynch, who passed away last Sunday week.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
It was last Sunday afternoon I got a phone call from a friend of mine in Ennis to give me some bad news that a good old friend of ours and somebody that you would have heard singing on the programme before and somebody that was mentioned, in fact, only about 3 weeks ago, a man by the name of Jerry Lynch passed away. And Jerry is a man that, as I said, you will be familiar with. He sang that lovely Cormac McConnell song at Christmas time called Silent Night 1915, but had the most wonderful tenor voice. And he's featured on the programme. And I just thought we should do something and pay tribute to him, because since he died, since he passed away, there have been so many tributes to him online and on radio and various places that I thought the one man that I should talk to about him is a man that knew him quite well and spoke to him only a few weeks ago. Again, no stranger to the programme. PJ Curtis, good evening and welcome. And thank you for joining me this evening on the programme.
Good evening, Ger.
We really have to stop having conversations on air at sad times like this. Jerry Lynch, a gentleman and somebody that had the most wonderful voice, didn't he?
He had a quite extraordinary voice. I've known him practically all my life since he was a lad, because we're cousins. We come from the same gene pool. I didn't really get to know him until we worked together back, oh my God, I can't believe it's all these years ago, in 1997, when we did an album together. I got to know him then, and in the years that followed and the time that followed, he became almost like a brother. He was a rare spirit. He was a gentleman. I mean, he was a gentleman apart from being a gentle spirit, if you know what I mean. And any room that he walked into, any time that I was ever with him, I never saw him at that form. I never saw him out of turn. I never heard him say anything kind of dark or bad about the world or anybody else.
When you say, PJ, that you're cousins, your mam would have been a Lynch, am I correct?
She was.
Yes.
She
and, that, yeah, family, and so yes. And the Lynch family then would be synonymous, of course, with the Kilfenora Cayley band. Jerry's brother John would be the leader of the band at the moment. And so that's just to put it in some bit of context for people.
I think the band back in the 50s, I think there were, apart from maybe one or two in the band, and there was a floating number, anything up to 14 or 15, is they were all related, all cousins, but the majority of them came from the Lynches. I think at one stage there was six Lynch from the same family all in the band, and his father, PJ, was in the band, a stalwart member in the 50s, and the band achieved its, I suppose, its greater fame back then.
Now, he had a fabulous tenor voice, and you did say that you didn't get to know Jerry until you really well, until you had, you know, got to work together back in 97. That tenor voice, was that a trained voice, or was it just his natural singing voice?
I think it was his natural voice. I don't think he ever had any training. And what always amazed me was that it was his voice. He didn't, you know, he wasn't kind of following any particular mode or style. And when I first heard him sing, I thought, you know, he's singing in the way that probably he would have heard the elders sing at the time, in a kind of in the accepted tenor form that was quite popular back from the John McCormack days. So he had taken that style rather than the more traditional style that would have been prevalent at the time as well.
Right.
What struck me about him was that his tone, and when you heard him sing, you just knew that he was truthful. He wasn't copying anybody, as I said. He was just being himself. And when he came to me, his idea was to make a tape. I remember that the morning very well. He said, I want to make a tape. Right. I said, what do you mean a tape? a cassette. I said, what are you kidding? I said, cassettes are for the birds. I said, look, if you're going to do something, Jerry, let's make an album. And he hadn't even thought about that. So it was through my prompting that he said, we started out together, and I didn't want the album to be. He was singing songs that like came from all quarters, but I wanted us to probably reach a wider audience as well, or have a wider flavour.
Right.
And I introduced songs to him that maybe he wouldn't have normally sung, because his repertoire was, it wasn't maybe as wide as I thought it should be.
Mm-hmm.
He embraced us. I mean, he didn't dig his heels in and say, oh, no, I can't do that.
Mm.
We approached the album, and I think about 6 months later or whatever, we'd done the album.
Mm.
And I must say, you know, from that album then came the 1916 song.
Yes.
Which was the Christmas 1915, rather.
Mm. I introduced Jerry on stage on a number of occasions, and he was always a joy to be in company with. And I remember one day talking to him and saying, Jerry, why are you not doing this on a full-time basis? You should be. You're fantastic. You're amazing. And he was shrugging it off and saying, ah, sure, you know. And he never had the huge belief in himself, I suppose, that was probably needed to give himself the push to go national and to make a full-time career of it. When he stood into, or when he came into the recording studio, was there a hesitancy, or did he just have his mind made up and he sang it and that's it?
That's it, yeah. The making of the album, well, it was very intense and all the rest of it, and rehearsal periods and choosing the musicians. I mean, that was my job, and doing all the arrangements. But he was a fantastic man in studio. In fact, just we were talking about the song 1915 there.
Yeah.
He had difficulty getting through it because he got so emotionally involved in this.
Wow.
And I think the take that we got, where I got him to finish it, was the first time, I think maybe four or five takes, which isn't a lot really,
right.
But like the other songs he nailed us in one or two takes, but this one, he was so emotional that he couldn't get through it without him tearing up and we had to stop. So that was a take that we actually got down in one take it has that. That's why I think it's got that special quality.
Okay.
But then when the album was made, and I said, now what are you going to do, Jerry? And he didn't really know.
Right.
And even though I gave him advice on, he wasn't sure about taking on a life on the road, as you said there. And he had such a kind of a gentle approach to the whole thing that I don't think that he had that killer instinct to get out there and do it. And because it's hard, you know, it is a hard life.
It is a hard slog.
Particularly for somebody, perhaps, you know, that wasn't singing contemporary song. He was singing some contemporary songs, which he now had in his repertoire and on the album, but he wasn't singing them in that contemporary way. And so he'd have to sell himself as somewhere between a tenor and just a damn good singer. Because anybody that heard him sing live were very effective. And everybody was surprised and would say, why is he not bigger than he is? Why is he not taking this on in a more committed way?
Yeah.
But he was a bit laissez-faire about the whole life as a professional in that way.
Right. It was appropriate that he did it when he did it back in the late 1990s, because it was pre that horrible thing, playlisting, that radio stations have employed now. And I was working full time at the time in Clare, and I was able to play. As you said, there was a great selection that you could choose from. And even like doing breakfast programs, or, you know, it was late on in the morning or whatever, I could actually play a Jerry Lynch track, which was lovely, because it's always nice to support the local artists. So the timing was just right. What do you think made him take that step in 1997?
To make the album?
Yeah.
I think he knew that he had something, I think. It must come from the artist to want to commit something to tape, which is what he said. Like, his idea was
just do
a few four-track or something like that.
Right.
That he could take around some of the gigs. Because he was getting work. And while it might be local work and some work with the band, Kitsunora, I mean, even the Kitsunora Kelly band hadn't reached the stage that they later did under John, his brother's direction.
Yeah.
So the idea of the album then put him on a different sort of a plateau, if you like. And he was very lucky to get an album deal. The single, Silent Night, Christmas 1915, was released just before Christmas. And it became a hit in the North, would you believe? It actually got into the charts in the North.
Wow.
And then it kind of seeped over into the South and became a firm Christmas standard, I think.
And it is actually, even on national radio now in Ireland, it's every year that you will hear that song, which is great.
Every year. So it's achieved that. But strangely, that success didn't convert into commercial success, if you like. The album sold well, but it didn't mean more work on the road. And he was reluctant, I think, even to kind of think about maybe getting a little band or a little unit. I think it was, yes. So at the end of the day, I'd have to say it was his own decision, maybe, to not kind of embrace all that life.
All right. Pity indeed. A very talented family. I suppose since you've heard the news, you've closed your eyes on many occasions and have had great memories of your time that you would have spent with him.
Oh, absolutely, Ger. And he was such a warm friend too. Like, we became very good friends, almost like brothers. So that every time he passed the house, we'd come in and have a chat. And sometimes we'd go on and meet Cormac McConnell.
Yeah.
And he loved Cormac, and Cormac loved him as well.
Yeah.
But he'll be sadly missed. I did actually watch the funeral service. It was on the internet.
Yeah.
And I was gutted in a way, not to think that I'm out here and not being able to attend. And so it's still very sad. It's news that I won't be able to sort of probably process until I get home and then realise like you're not going to see him again.
You know, the irony of it is that even if you were in Ireland, you wouldn't have been able to attend the funeral because of the restrictions. And I suppose it's only at times like that that we realise just how important it is to be able to shake hands and to be able to put our arms around each other at a time of grief, isn't it?
Absolutely. I was talking to a friend of mine in Kilfenora today. They lined the streets in Kilfenora as the funeral cortege went by.
Lovely.
And I think the person I spoke to, they thought that was very sad as well, because had it been under normal circumstances, Jerry would have had a phenomenal funeral,
yes,
given his own for the man himself, and also for, you know, his reputation and being
indeed
involved with the band in the music all the years. So it is a strange time. And I was even thinking that we should embrace our friends anyway now, I think, because had I known the last time I saw Jerry, or even the last time I spoke to him, only a month ago, that I was never going to speak to him again. But then that's life, isn't it? You know, you just don't know the day or the hour.
So,
It's a sad time.
Indeed. All right. Well, PJ, as I said, we must stop just talking at sad times, and we must get together and have a chat about happier times. You're on my hit list. You know that for a long time. I wish you well. Before I let you go, will you pick something that you would like me to play from Jerry?
Well, I think the title track of the album, Dimming of the Day, would be appropriate.
Excellent.
Or Dreaming of Dreams. Either one of those two songs were favourites of mine from that album.
Okay. PJ Curtis, as always, thank you very much for joining us, and look forward to talking to you again at another stage soon.
Thank you, Ger.
This old house is falling down around my ears. I'm drowning in a river of my tears. When all my will is gone, hold me sway. I need you at the dimming of the day. You hold me like the moon pulls on the tide. Where I keep my better side. When days come to keep us far apart, a broken promise bitterness of this broken heart. Now all the bonny boys will away. I need you at the dimming of the day. Come the night, you're the only one I want. Come the night, you could be my confidant. I see you on a street in company. Why don't you come and ease your mind with me? I'm living for the night. We steal away. Yes, I need you at the dimming of the day.
The lovely voice of Jerry Lynch, the man from Kilfenora. That's a song called The Dimming of the Day. And it was the title track from the album that was produced by the man we spoke to just before that, who chose the song, PJ Curtis. And thank you to PJ for joining us from Nerja in Spain to tell us a little bit about the wonderful Jerry Lynch. Also on the line today is a man that PJ and myself just spoke about, and that's Cormac McConnell. Cormac, as always, a joy to talk to you. How are you today?
I am very well indeed here in Killaloe, but I have to say, shocked at the passing of that lovely man, Jerry Lynch. He transformed a song that I had written into something special that we both, down the years, became very proud of, Christmas in the Trenches. Yeah. But above and beyond that, Jerry Lynch, from that very musical North Clare family, he was a lovely man. I find it so difficult to accept the fact that he has passed to another dimension, where clearly he will be singing in the choir with that lovely, lovely voice of his, and transforming ordinary lyrics and ordinary airs into something special, as he was himself. God have mercy on him, and I am shocked between the passing of Pat Costello recently and the passing of Jerry. I am almost afraid to pick up the phone nowadays. the loss of another friend from a special time in my life, and a special time in Clare FM, I have to say, which I hugely enjoyed and often think about. But back to Jerry Lynch. Jerry Lynch had a beautiful voice inside a beautiful head, inside a great musical repertoire. He was a lovely man, and I can scarcely believe that he is gone, as I say, to sing with the angels above. God mercy on him.
Indeed. And Cormac, on the many occasions that you and I have spoken around Christmas time about Silent Night 1915, you wrote the song, but you didn't write it for Jerry. Tell us again how Jerry happened to sing that song.
I don't clearly remember. I think it was through PJ Curtis that Jerry became aware of it, and I sang it to him somewhere, someplace, probably in Kieran's in Ennis or somewhere.
Right, yeah.
And I sang it to him, and he said, I love it. Mm. And it took off from there. And it was special for both of us. I had written and have written a lot of maudlin songs that I don't care to remember. This one was a little bit special, but it was made special by that voice from above.
Did you have the good sense to bring him into the studio and talk to him on an occasion or more?
I don't remember, Jerry. Yeah. I don't remember if I spoke to him in the studio about it, but certainly we spoke about it quite often, and we were in touch down the years, and he called here quite recently to Killaloo, and I was delighted to see him, and we reminisced. I don't think we talked about it on air, but okay. I'm at an age now, Ger Sweeney, I'm at an age where you tend to forget the episodes of the past, but certainly I will never, ever forget that beautiful soul that has gone to another dimension. All God have mercy on him.
All right, we're not going to play the song right now, but we will do, if we're all spared, as the man says, in December. You will hear it on many occasions, no doubt. The lovely Silent Night 1915. Cormac McConnell, journalist, former broadcaster, good old pal and great raconteur. Thank you for talking to us today about the wonderful and unfortunately the late Jerry Lynch.
Thanks, Ger. A great pleasure.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
In Ireland, we went to the polls on the 8th of February, and the government that was formed as a result of that only happened last Saturday week, in fact, the 27th of June. And just to give you a little bit of an idea as to how people in Ireland are viewing it, there's a great meme or a meme going around online at the minute, and for the last week or so, it says, the Minister for Children has no children. The Minister for Higher Education never graduated from any college. The Minister for Health is an engineer with no medical background. Let's not forget that the Minister for Transport cycles a bicycle and is opposed to cars. And the new leader of the Seanad, Seanad Éireann, actively fought for its abolition a number of years ago. George Lee joins me to discuss our brand new, brand spanking new government in Ireland. George, it's been called historic. Should it be hysterical rather than historical?
You know, I get the meme and I get all of that, Ger, but I suppose, you know, Michael Collins worked in the post office, you know. I mean, you know, and I know people that have went to college and did their college degrees, and, you know, the jobs that they're in now bear no resemblance at all what they would have done their college. So, look, I don't buy that. Look, if somebody has the ability and is able to do it, they're able to do it. What shocked me was that you said that the election was on the 8th of February, and of course I knew that, but I mean, the 8th of February, Chair, it seems like a
doesn't
million
it?
Years ago.
Doesn't it?
You and I spent the whole of last year, you know, talking every day on every week on the radio, and all we spoke about was Brexit.
That's right.
And I've hardly heard the word mentioned in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
This is nothing to do with the news cycle. We just have had our whole lives turned upside down in a way that nobody could have predicted.
But anyway, we're through it. And we have a new government. It is a historic government because the two civil war parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, they said it would never happen, but they're in coalition and they've brought the Greens along with them. Is it the government that the Irish people voted for? Leave aside how you may have voted and I may have voted, but is it what the country voted for?
Well, Ger, 66% of the people voted for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, no matter what way we look at it, you know,
right.
Or 60% of the people,
yeah,
or whatever it was,
yeah.
And another, you know, 12 TDs were elected for the Green Party.
Mm.
So they wouldn't have been able to form a government unless they had a majority.
Mm.
So the majority in the Dáil is representative of the people. Now, is that the government people voted for? I don't know. Is the perfect answer, I suppose. But the other side of it is that how relevant is what we voted for on the 8th of February now? in the light of all that's happened since, and to be fair to Leo Varadkar, and you know, you and I have both been very critical of him and the Fine Gael led minority government or whatever way you wanted to call it of the last number of years, they have done a superb job. There's absolutely no doubt about it throughout the pandemic.
I would disagree with you only slightly in that is that they did a fantastic job at the start and up to the point where they kind of thought, well, okay, everything is locked down now. People are going to want to get out of this very shortly. And they haven't done it properly. They just haven't. And I think they've rushed things. I think they've been pushed into things. If you look at opening the pubs and God knows, and I'm as gasping as any man for a pint. But, you know, hairdressers being opened 6 or 7 weeks in advance. So I would agree with you up to a point that, yes, they did a great job at the start. But from about midway through, they seem to have lost the run of themselves.
But, Ger, if you go back again to that, from the middle of the whole pandemic, I suppose, the government began to lose traction from the perspective of people were beginning to say, yeah, look, you need to form a new government here. You know, we don't have senators. They couldn't even pass legislation because they didn't have senators to pass it. So I think at that point, the lobby groups began to become far more powerful than they should have been. And I think that's where things began to kick in. Now, then on the other side of that, Jerry, there's a very delicate balance between what's right from a public health point of view, what's right economically, and I suppose what's right even from the point of view of people's mental health, because that was a very, very, very important part of all of this as well.
It was.
I think we were fortunate that we had a doctor who was a Taoiseach, who got on quite well with your former and my former classmate, Dr. Tony Houlihan, who I think has done a superb job. I think he is continuing to hold the line that, lads, look, if this whole thing goes whatever way it's going to go, you know, don't blame me, I've told you.
Okay, let's go back to government formation and look at the geographic spread of the cabinet. West of Ireland has been, for the first time ever in the history of the state, has not been given a seat at the cabinet. Now, I know that Derek Killeary, who is the chief whip, is from the West of Ireland, but he doesn't take an active part really in decision making. But what do you make of that, the geographic spread?
I suppose it came down to the fact that, again, you have three parties in government. Micheál Martin is from the Cork constituency. Unfortunately, we have three ministers from one constituency. Simon Coveney couldn't have been left out because he was the former Taoiseach. He is a constituency colleague of Micheál Martin's, as is Michael McGrath, who was his right-hand man throughout the whole thing. So, you know, I suppose that's where the problem lay. He had a difficulty then as well with the gender balance.
That's the other side,
and that's, I think, why... That's why I think Norma Foley was drafted in first time TD as Minister for Education. I suppose if he hadn't put somebody in from Kerry, he wouldn't have anybody at all along the West Coast.
Correct.
Which would have been even worse. Derek Killeary, I mean, it must have been a real kick in the ass, in fairness to Derek Killeary. I think it was making the best job of what they had. I mean, irrespective, Chair of the Junior Ministries, we're in a situation in this country now, I suppose, where we don't have a minister. But the other point that has been made is that in the last 10 years, no issue has gone to a vote at cabinet.
Yeah.
So the super junior ministers have just as much say around the table, unless it comes to a vote.
Of course,
so
never before really has there been a coalition of like there is now, where you have the old enemies, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and the Greens. So maybe things might actually get a little bit more heated at the table.
Well, they could do. I smiled the other night when Micheál Martin said that, you know, he was going to put up the picture of Michael Collins to the one of Dev in the Taoiseach's office. And I said, yeah, great, and an absolutely great line, and, you know, great PR speech. And everything else. But I actually thought in the back of my mind, what would Michael Collins and Dev actually think of?
Yeah.
But you see, the other is, Ger, that those parties have gone so far away now from what were the ideals of Collins and that how relevant is it in any case?
Is it going to be worse for Fianna Fáil than it is for Fine Gael next time round? Will there be a backlash?
Fianna Fáil are currently residing at 15%, I think, in the polls. Mm. Fine Gael have got a great bounce from COVID. If there was an election in the morning, you would see possibly Fine Gael getting very close to an overall majority on the basis of the numbers that they're looking at the moment. But look, there's an awful lot of water to flow under a bridge. Even if there was an election call in the morning, which there isn't going to be, I think there's an awful lot of campaigning to happen. The one thing I would say is that Fine Gael aren't going to get any better numbers than they've got at the moment. Remember that all the money that's been poured into the economy and all of the people that have got COVID money for the last number of months, all of that money has to be paid back. That is where things are going to get extremely interesting. The other side of this, and I'm speaking, I suppose, as somebody who has an interest in the environment, but certainly wouldn't go along with the raising of carbon taxes to the levels that I'm hearing about. I do worry a little bit about a green tail wagging Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael dog. Mm. That is a problem for me. I do think that we're going to have to look at things now from a European context rather than from a purely nationalistic context, because we're going to need, and we're going back to that word Brexit again. Brexit is going to start closing in around the end of the year. If there isn't a deal done, things are going to get very hot and very heavy, and we're going to need our friends in Europe. Our friends in Europe then also need to step up to the plate, and then how relevant do green agendas and all of that become at that point?
We spoke before the election about apathy and voters, you and me and others, saying, yeah, what's the point? Aren't they all the same? After all that Fianna Fáil said about Fine Gael and how they would never go into power and how it would be awful and how any government that would have Fine Gael in it would not be the government the people were looking for, after all that Fine Gael said about the Greens and Greens about Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, can we trust them or believe a single word that comes out of their mouths? Is it just like, are we wasting our time here?
Yeah, look, Pat Rabbit kind of put his finger on it a number of years ago in an election way back when. And he says, never mind what they say when they're out. Because when the reality of government formation comes in, sure, all they need to do now is point to the formation document and say, look, lads, I know what we said. But look, we negotiated a thing. We went back to the party. You all agreed, 75% or 80% of the parties agreed with it. Lads, sorry, that's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. And you know what? As representatives of the country, that's what we picked up from the country. Now, the only time that's going to become an issue for them is if they go back to the polls again. And you would wonder, are the real winners out of this going to be Sinn Féin in the long term?
I'm just going to ask you.
Yeah, because, I mean, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, look, for the last number of years, they could have merged anyway with the confidence and supply agreement that was in place in the Dáil. And now, I suppose, those battle lines will be drawn even closer, because I think it's going to bear down on the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to have to be coming together an awful lot more to put Schmacht on the Green Party in government. And, you know, it'll get to the stage where you'll give me a name like Dara Cillieri, or you'll give me a name, you know, like Norma Foley, and you'll say to me, was she Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael?
Okay.
And I won't know in the back of my head.
Okay. Sinn Féin supporters and Sinn Féin party members would have thought that the sun had risen for them on this occasion. It didn't come about. I remember actually seeing on the newspaper shortly after the election that somebody jokingly said Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens should get together to stop Sinn Féin. And it actually materialised. Do you think they'll get over the line at some point?
I think they will. I think constitutionally they still have a problem, Ger, I think, from an appearance point of view. And I think it kind of came to the fore a little bit as well in the last couple of days.
Indeed, with the funeral.
The funeral in the north. And a lot of the old ghosts were resurrected out of the closets again, and people looked at it again. I suppose the only difference between those ghosts and the ghosts that Fianna Fáil have in the closet are that the Fianna Fáil ghosts are 80 years older than the Sinn Féin ghosts in a lot of ways.
And indeed, even Fianna Gael, when you look at the blue shirts
and Fianna Gael. I do think the other problem that they have is that they haven't really delineated the difference between Sinn Féin in Northern Ireland and Sinn Féin in the Republic of Ireland.
And they can't do that.
But I think that that's creating a difficulty for them, because I think an awful lot, I think there's almost the opposite of what happened previously is now happening. I think an awful lot of people in the south of Ireland are getting snobbish about not wanting people from the north anymore, rather than the other way, which is the way that it was up to 10 years ago. And people are kind of saying, well, look, you know, if the north want to be troublemakers, let them go and be troublemakers, but do it in your own time. We have enough problems down south of the border. Now, that's my perception of where it is. I'm not exactly saying that that's my view.
Okay.
But that's the way that I'm perceiving the way that things are.
All right. Okay, well, look, we have the new government. It'll be interesting to keep an eye and see what happens, whether we're going to be taxed to high heavens or what's going to happen. But listen, thanks very much for your spin on the new government in Ireland.
Thank you, Ger.
George Lee, a pleasure as always.
I've a nice little cot and a small bit of land in a place by the side of the sea. And I care about no one because I believe there's nobody cares about me. My peace is destroyed and I'm fairly annoyed by a lassie who works in the town. She sighs every day as she passes the way. Do you want your old lobby washed down? Do you want your old lobby washed down, Conshine? Do you want your old lobby washed down? She sighs every day as she passes the way. Do you want your old lobby washed down? The other day the old landlord came by for his rent. I told him no money I had. Besides, 'twasn't fair for to ask me to pay. The times were so awfully bad. He felt discontent at not getting his rent, and he shook his big head with a frown. Says he, I'll take half, but says I with a laugh, do you want your old lobby washed down? Do you want your old lobby washed down, Conshine? Do you want your old lobby washed down? Says he, I'll take half, but says I with a laugh, do you want your old lobby washed down? Now the boys look so bashful when they go out courting, they seem to be so very shy. To kiss a young maid, sure they seem half afraid, but they would if they could on the sly. But me, I do things in a different way. I don't give a nod or a frown. When I goes to court, I says, here goes for sport. Do you want your old lobby washed down? Do you want your old lobby washed down, Conshine? Do you want your old lobby washed down? When I goes to court, I says, here goes for sport. Do you want your old lobby washed down? Do you want your old lobby washed down, Conshine? Do you want your old lobby washed down? When I goes to court, I says, here goes for sport. Do you want your old lobby washed down, Conshine?
That song took Ireland by storm, believe it or believe it not. It was number one on this very day back in 1979. That's Brendan Shine. And do you want your old lobby washed down? Right, I think that's my lot for today and for this week. I sincerely hope that you have enjoyed the programme as much as I have enjoyed putting it together and presenting it to you. Just a quick reminder, if you would like to get in touch at any stage, you can email ger, at tre.radio is the best way to get in contact with me. Alrighty, and thanks very much to people who do get in contact. I'll do another few thank yous in a few minutes. Just a quick reminder that if you are checking out our website, don't forget that there is a listen back facility there. If there's any part of the programme that you missed or that you'd like to hear again or you'd like to tell somebody about, it's very easy to go to our listen back facility on the website, tre.radio is all you have to find. And it's all there right in front of you. And there's plenty of news and information as well, not just about our presenters, but about the radio station and about what we do and how we do it and so on and so forth. All right. And spread the news, spread the word, because it is Talk Radio Europe. So no matter where you are in the world, you can hear us because we're online. We've got the app. We're on the old smart speakers as well. You know, where you tell the speaker, hey, speaker, just play Talk Radio Europe there, please, and no lip. And then the speaker plays it. So it's grand and handy. So do let your friends know all about what is happening there. Can I say a big thank you to PJ Curtis and to Cormac McConnell for joining me on the programme today to talk to me about the late Jerry Lynch. Lovely to hear some of their stories. As I said to PJ, it's a pity that we get to talk to these people so regularly for bad news. Thank you as well to George Lee for taking time to talk to us about the formation of the new government in Ireland, and to go through a little bit of how we, the Irish people, are thinking about that formation and about the government as well. We'll talk to George again, no doubt, at some point in the future. Thank you, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, that is Jose Antonio Sierra, for all of the work that he does on the programme. And most especially, thank you for listening. I'm going to finish on a piece of music, and I'm going to take another track from Jerry Lynch, if that's all right, because it is such a beautiful voice that he had. You will recall that PJ Curtis said that, you know, his tenor voice was one thing, but he could do things with ordinary, in inverted comma, songs as well. And I think this demonstrates exactly what he meant by that. Let's take a listen one more time to the late Jerry Lynch and a beautiful song called California Blue. Until we meet again, from me, Jerry Sweeney, bye-bye.
Working all day and the sun don't shine, trying to get by, and I'm just killing time. I feel the rain fall the whole night through, far away from you, California blue, California blue, dreaming all alone, nothing else to do, California blue, every day I pray, I'll be on my way, saving love. California blue. One sunny day I'll get back again, somehow, some way, but I don't know when. California blue, California. Living my life with you on my mind, thinking of things that I left far behind. It's been so long, doing all I can do to get back to you. California blue, California blue, dreaming all alone, nothing else to do, California blue, every day I pray, I'll be on my way, saving love for you, California blue. One sunny day I'll get back again, somehow, some way, but I don't know when. California blue, California blue.
the blue, still missing you, California blue, still missing you, California blue.
Jerry Sweeney presents Live on Era. You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.